Can you set the scene for us? What was Texarkana, Texas, like in 1946?
Well, actually, there were two cities as they are today, Texarkana, Arkansas, and Texarkana, Texas, divided only by a state line, which is almost imaginary, but State Line Avenue is the street that divides the two towns.
Well, you mentioned that it was a rowdy town, and the book is very evocative, painting that picture of Texarkana being very much almost like a Wild West town during the war. But
well, I look back to the newspapers in the 1940s, and I started in 1940, then moved forward to 1946. And just skipping through there, yeah, there was a lot of things going on. You had robberies, safe crackings, you had killings, and a lot of automobile accidents. You had two defense plants came in just before the war started, so you had an influx of people. And so the population was around 50,000 by then, not a big town, but you had a lot of people coming from different parts of the country, and, you know, alcohol was available on both sides of the state line. So you had a number of cases, some of them big headlines. So it was not a calm, peaceful town. But, you know, people growing up in safe communities never had any great fear of that. You know, it seemed like it's almost idyllic. But if you're in places where violence happened, it was rowdy.
Do you think that it was some sort of combination of the youth of some of the victims, as well as the almost random and pronounced violence of these attacks, that really seemed to catch people off guard?
Well, yeah. I think the age of some of the victims was a factor in setting off fears. Max Tackett, who was a vigorous investigator in this case, put it this way, that Texarkana was callous to murder at that time. But I think especially when you got the second double murder, these kids were 16 and 15, that was a different stage. Plus you had the pattern of the earlier double murders, which had not been overlooked. You had a big headline about it. But this was different, and I think it was really recognized when the second double murder happened that also young people, then people say, hey, no one's safe. Because Lover's Lanes around Texarkana was safe places, about as safe as a motel room or a movie theater then, until this happened. And after that, Lover's Lanes were mainly visited by lawmen posing as couples. After the second double murder, if the Phantom had chosen Lover's Lanes, you probably ended up with a Texas Ranger to deal with, dressed up as a woman.
That would have been a heck of a picture.
I'm telling you.
Now, I noted with a great deal of interest that one of the lead investigators in the case was Bowie County Sheriff Bill Presley. Now, that's not a coincidence, is it?
Well, he was my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I didn't talk with Bill about this case until years later. Several years ago when I wrote an 8-part series of articles about it. It was really my first study of the case. And we talked, I didn't sit down for a formal interview, but we talked several times about it. And also I did more sit-down interviews with Max Tackett, and who was a state trooper at the time. And in fact, he's the one who arrested the major suspect. And Tillman Johnson, who had, I'd known these men back when I was a kid reporter for the Texarkana Gazette. This is some time after the murders had happened. But I got to know a lot of the law enforcement people then as a result of that. And so these were people I could go back to very easily.
What prompted your initial interest in this case?
Well, back when I did the series of articles, it was just something that was of interest in Texarkana, but there was a lot of unknown factors. And later I decided, in fact, people then said, hey, why don't you write a book about it? Because by that time I'd written a number of books, but I realized then it was a very complicated case. TV has always been doing something on this, the Learning Channel did two stories. One thing led to another, and I realized, though, that the rumors and the misinformation, all that was becoming a problem. People didn't really know. The movie, The Town That Dreads Sundown, had come out. It had been filmed here in Texarkana, and it was based very loosely on the facts of the case, but it was distorted quite a bit. It was really fictionalized. And this had complicated a case that was already getting lost in memory over the years.
I think it's interesting to note that the Phantom Killer had the same number of victims as Jack the Ripper, who was also never caught.
That's and right.
I wonder how much you think all of the unknowns in this 1946 case continue to drive the interest, the general interest, much like the Jack the Ripper case.
Well, yes, to some extent, and also a lot of things. Like I said, the it'd be TV stories done in the region and then national on the Learning Channel and things like that. But then with the arrival of the Internet, you had websites that were publicizing this crime as well as others. I think that was a factor. And then the movie, The Town That Dreads Sundown, although it was mostly fiction, at the same time it publicized the case and kept it alive or added to it. So I think all these, the technology change also, well, of course, that had a factor in keeping the London killings alive, too.
Now, I don't want to give anything away, but you've put together in the book a case for who you think that suspect, the actual culprit, is. What pointed you in that direction, I suppose? Was this something that was in the evidence and these law enforcement officials were already considering this person and just basically couldn't put the case together?
Well, actually, it came about by accident when he was arrested, but before then, this was in the summer of 1946 that he was arrested, and one revelation led to another, and he became the major suspect. But before then, people were even wondering about their neighbors. There were rumors, all kinds of rumors going on. And then the newspaper came out with a headline that, quoting an anonymous source, that this was a sex maniac. So we can imagine a headline in the midst of all this, sex maniac hunted and murders. Well, this just threw emotions into overdrive. Mm-hmm. Several years ago, there was a couple came from another city about 100 miles from Texarkana who were investigating the case, and they told me they knew who did it. And I said, oh, who was it? There were the men who lived in our block. Oh, really? I said, what was the evidence? He said, well, he acted funny at that time. Well, I said, if you come to been in Texarkana at that time, I bet you'd found about 50,000 people who were acting funny because, you know, it was almost a life-changing event. Well, hundreds of people were taken into custody, almost all men, occasionally a woman, but they always had alibis or didn't check out one reason or another. But in the case you're mentioning, the individual, eventually he had his wife had given statements implicating him in the Spring Lake Park murders of the two young teenagers, and there was other evidence related to the Arkansas case. He was never charged, but he was convicted as a habitual criminal and sentenced to life in the penitentiary in Texas prison. Glenn Owen, who had profiled a number of cases successfully, also named this person to be the one. And then lawmen generally at that time pretty well focused on he was the one. And the reasons why he was never charged with the murder, too. One thing, the guns were never found, but he had been known to own a .32 automatic and a .22 automatic. And he never had a confirmed alibi for any of the crimes.
How does Texarkana deal with this case?
I guess today there's a mixed reaction. and that's a result of the movie and the notoriety over the years. But at first, the best I can make out, there was a form of denial and feeling of trauma and stigma. It was killing business along with the people. In fact, the editor of the Texarkana Gazette told me, they'd ask him at some of the national newspaper meetings about the Phantom Killer. Said, oh, that was a stranger just passing through town. And that was kind of maybe the hope of people. But actually, it was on the evidence I've collected, it's a homegrown terrorist. But I think when the movie came out, it was filmed on location in Texarkana, the town that dreaded sundown, which was a terrific title. And it had local people in it, extras, and some had larger roles. And I think that that was a factor that attracted a degree of pride, because this was a local product. Dr. Jack Levin, a noted criminologist, wrote that a small town where a crime like this happens usually feels stigmatized. But it seems to me that Texarkana didn't experience that except at the beginning. And this was also so removed in time from the event, and I think that changed the focus. But today, no matter what the local reaction may become, it seems that Texarkana will always be linked with the Phantom Murders.